Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome in to episode 45 of the House of L podcast. I am Lawrence Holmes. I never thought that we would get this far in the 6 months that we've done the podcast, but it's going to be close to 50 episodes before the year ends. Before we go into season two of the podcast, it will be almost 50 episodes, which is crazy to me. I appreciate you sticking with me. I appreciate the sponsors that we've had so far with Melly Cafe and the Chicago Wolves being a part of it. And there might be some other sponsors coming up in the next few weeks, which I'm really excited about. Part one of the conversation with my students last week with Matthew Zafe and Bella Michaels, I thought was really cool. And I thought that it was a lot of fun the first hour. So let me just tell you how it went. Initially, my plan was for us to talk for 45 minutes, that I'd have the opportunity to talk with them. We kind of do a fun, like, ask me anything type deal about the business. You get to know who they are so that when you see them pop up on the scene later on, you're not surprised. What ended up happening is that we talked for a little over 2 hours. So that's why I thought I would make it two episodes instead of one, because it's asking a lot for you to stick around for 2 hours in one sitting. And I know that people, they consume podcasts in different ways. Some people are like, if it's good, you know, let it ride for 2 hours. But I thought I would break it up and you could jump in and go backwards, because it's not like they're sequential. I could have done part two as part one, but I went in order of the way that things went. And there's a distinct difference between part two and part one. And the difference is what the content is about. Like, the content becomes a little bit more about me and my career in part two. And there's a lot of questions in here that people have asked me, whether it's, you know, on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or whatever. But I thought my students did a really good job of kind of getting to the heart of the matter in the way that they ask their questions. And the cool part about Matthew and Bella is that because they did a bunch of shows together in my class, they know how to work with each other. And it's really fun. Like, listening back to it as an instructor, the fact that Matthew fires off a bunch of questions without Bella feeling compelled to jump in. And the same thing happens the other way, where Bella wanted to ask follow-ups and Matthew didn't feel compelled. Like, that takes a while to learn. There are a lot of professionals who don't understand. Sometimes you got to let your partner go do
their questioning and not worry about having your voice heard. So they did a wonderful job, but there's a lot in here. Like there's, the first question, I'll just leave it up to you to listen, but the first question takes us down a really interesting rabbit hole, and it's about failure, and particularly mine. What my biggest failure is as a broadcaster, it's in there. You'll also learn about some of my philosophies on radio. You'll learn why Joe Ostrowski and I are so close. Why, of the people that are here, he is probably, he and Herbie and Tanny are like high on the list of people that I trust because of the nighttime show and what happened when I took over the nighttime show. So that's in there. How the House of L found its focus, like how I figured out that this is the way that I wanted the podcast to go, is also in here. And you'll get a sense of, if you're interested, not, I don't know if you would be, but if you wanted to know, like, well, wait, what's your class like? You'll get a sense of what the class is like too, through the eyes of two of my students. So thanks for checking out part one. It did really well. I feel like part two might do better because it's a little bit more, salacious is not the right word. It's a little bit more probing. Part one was more fun. This is a little bit more serious. So here it is. Part two. This is Matthew Zafe and Bella Michaels interviewing yours truly.
What was like one of your biggest failures? Oh. And how did you grow from this failure?
Oh my God, that's a wonderful question. I did a show back in 2009, a midday show with Dan Hampton, a Bears legend, Hall of Fame player. And it was kind of a shotgun wedding, the two of us. Now, the great part about this is that 10 years later, like that guy is my friend and been my advocate. We did some TV stuff together when I was working in Channel 5. But doing a radio show that wasn't Bears-centric was weird because I had been covering the Bears up until that point for every day for seven seasons at that point. And obviously he is an oracle when it comes to Bears football. He is one of the guys that people talk about in great detail. So we did this show every day. And the show, I want to say, started in March, which was also weird. Because why is Dan Hampton doing a show going into baseball season? Mm-hmm. So we struggled terribly. And I thought that I didn't do a great job of bringing him along. And I kind of knew that we were doomed. When he said to me, he's like, okay, so you watch baseball every night. I'm like, yes. Like both teams. Yes. Because we're going to have to talk about it tomorrow. He's like, every night? I was like, yeah, that's what we have to do. And I was like, we're doomed. Like,
because he's already questioning the format.
Yeah, well, he doesn't do this. So what was great is he liked to occasionally place a wager. And so he found that his way to get interested was to do the work of, if I'm going to gamble on this game, which way would I gamble? But it didn't work. The show didn't work. It didn't resonate with the audience. And I think 8 months in, the score pulled the plug on it. And I didn't know what – I had never been fired ever and haven't been since. I had never been in a position where I had failed so publicly. Hmm. Like, this was a disaster. And I remember when they told me that they were going to go in a different direction. And I went home. I went back to my apartment in Kenwood, and I pulled the covers over my head on my couch and just cried. Because I had failed. Like, it was a monumental failure. And I was trying to decide, am I still going to do this? Like, does this end me as a broadcaster? Like, I had my shot. That's my dream job. Like, the midday show at the Score was my dream job. And I was like, man, I had it, and I lost it. I had it. It was in my grasp. I need to be better. What can I do to be better? Why wasn't I able to make the show work? With time, I've realized that nothing was going to make that show work. Had you put me and Hamp on Sundays after Bears game, we'd have rocked it. It would have been the most listened to show in radio. Like, we would have done a great Bears show. And we did. We actually did a Bears show on television a couple years later when I got to Channel 5, and it was great. It was one of the most magical times in my career. But my boss said, I really appreciate Mitch Rosen for this. He's like, I want you to take a couple days off. I want you to figure out what's next. And I want you to host the nighttime show. And I want you to do it by yourself. And after taking a couple days to mourn, and because that's what it was. Like, I was mourning the fact that the midday show didn't work. I kind of said, okay, I get to do the show that I've always wanted to do. And what was great is that the executive producer of my show is a guy named Joe Ostrowski, who I adore. He had an opportunity. I think he was producing the morning show, and they had brought someone else in. And so they had replaced Joe. So Joe came to work with me at nights. So it was like we were these exiles. Like, that's how we kind of looked at it. Like, we were these two exiles that were like, that's never, ever going to happen again. Mm. We're going to put together a show that is amazing and great. And I'm so happy that he was the guy that was there to kind of catch me, because he understood my frustration and my anger. We were both like in the same place, in this really like weirdly creative place, because we were so angry. And it allowed us to build a show. And then we had, you know, Chris Tannehill, who was one of the sound guys, who now does afternoons over at the Score, the most brilliant sound guy. And we just happened upon him, and he was great. And the Herb Lawrence, who's now my executive producer at night, he was there too. And I started to kind of build myself back up.
So was the opportunity to work with Joe on the nighttime show, was that enough to curb all of your feelings of self-doubt? Or was there, I mean, was this a longer healing process, or did you kind of snap back right as you got back on the air?
I am most comfortable in a radio studio. So even when I go on vacation, it's weird for me. It's hard. Like, being away from the studio is troubling. I don't like doing shows on the road, because there's something about the ecosystem of a radio studio that calms me to a certain degree. I just think that it was the perfect marriage. I don't know if it would have worked had it been anyone else, because he understood where I was coming from, that the way that I was going to go about the preparation of the show, how I was at a point where if I was going to fail, I was going to fail doing what I wanted to do and not what anyone else wanted me to do. Now, there are concessions that you have to make throughout your entire career. And there are some that I make now, like, but I want to take on projects where me being unique actually adds value to it. And so that gave us a chance, and we did great analysis. I think we had a lot of fun. Joe's since been promoted to on air, and he's great. He is now one of the foremost authorities in Chicago, and honestly around the country, when it comes to sports betting, which is a niche that he figured out, like, oh, here's where I fit. This is something that I like, that I'm passionate at, that I can do. And it's become that. So it was hard, but I mean, those days in between were really difficult, because I was in complete doubt of myself and my skills, that maybe this isn't for you. Maybe you need to reevaluate where it is you're at. But I also felt a little pot committed. I also felt like, you've given up so much at this point. You have to keep going with it. So I'm really happy that Mitch gave me the opportunity to take the nighttime show and take ownership of it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's my show. And 10 years later, I feel like we've done some incredible stuff. And I felt like I got better as a broadcaster. Like, I actually thought that one of my weaknesses as a broadcaster was interviewing. I didn't think I was great at it. I'm good in a room. Like, I'm good at a press conference. But sitting down and interviewing someone is a different skill set. So I started listening to guys that I liked doing interviews. I started listening more to Dan Patrick because I think that he's really good at doing interviews. And I wanted to add some of that to my own quirkiness. And it's worked out. But, man, like, that was – I don't even know if I've ever really talked about this. So that's a great job by you of asking a good question.
Well, I appreciate that. Could you just describe a little bit what that transition period was like? I mean, now you got your show. You know you're with Joe. You guys are going to be a creative force to be reckoned with. But was there a lot of time before you kind of felt like you hit your stride? Or was it kind of just like, we're here, we know what we're doing, and you just kind of ran with it?
I would say that it probably took about 6 months where we felt like this is the template for what we're going to do. Where it's we're listening back to stuff or we're saying, well, why don't we do this? Like, why don't we take advantage of what you did out in the field? Like, Joe was really good about, why don't we play more sound? Like, you're mm-hmm. a solo host. Play more sound. React to the sound. People want to hear what you think about what this guy said. And it has become something that we've done. My sports show is kind of stripped down to it's like bare minimum type stuff. Like, we, and some of that is because the show gets truncated. I look at it as like a news program. Like, I look at it as the Daily Show, but with sports. So let's talk about the big stories of the day. Let's have a little bit of fun. Here's a soundbite that we can all listen to and react to. And Joe kind of helped me figure out that template was there. It was a lot of trial and error. We weren't trying anything that was crazy. Like, we weren't trying to reinvent the wheel. Sports talk is pretty simple when you get to it. It's just a matter of, can you perfect the elements that seem simple but are really kind of difficult? We weren't trying to be incredibly innovative or we're going to totally change sports talk. It was just, let's do the things that you can do well, and let's do it more often.
Right. So rather than abide by a typical formulaic format, you decided that you guys knew what you had to bring to the table, and you wanted to just showcase your talents as best as possible.
Yep. And Joe was in a place where he was super competitive. Like, he was like, I'm the best producer here. I'm going to get you the best guest. And what I think are best guests, and this is where I think we really vibe as host and producer. Big names are not always great guests. You can have a star athlete on your show and the interview's terrible because that person doesn't want to give. What Joe was great at was finding people who knew how to talk. It's a really simple concept for radio, but he wanted to find people who could explain different things in sports. So that might be a great columnist. That might be a reporter who I have a rapport with. That might be an author of a book that we have no, like, we're not even thinking about, but it relates to something that's going on in Chicago sports. We got away from the competitive side of, well, let's try to get, for example, let's get Chris Bryant on the show. Chris Bryant's great, and when I've talked to him, he's been outstanding. But Barry Rosner, the guy from the Daily Herald, better talker, more interesting, and is going to give us an opportunity to hold the listener a little bit more than even, hey, Chris Bryant's going to be on the score, because Chris Bryant's going to say all the right things.
Right. He's used to it.
He's been his whole life. And that doesn't mean that that's bad. It just means for what we were doing, we were like, we can take that formula and change it a little bit. And give people better long-form interviews than everyone's competing for the same couple of guys here or there. And you stumble upon great interviews. You stumble upon people that like your show, that will come back, that will come in studio to do interviews. And when Joe and I figured that out, we were like, let's go. Like, let's bring people in. Let's have conversations. I would say over the last, like, 5 years, we've tried desperately to be more in studio. For some reason, and it bothers me still, we've done all this stuff with technology, but we can't get a cell phone call right. Like, they still break up. The lines still break up. So we wanted to eliminate that element as much as we could. People don't really have landlines anymore because that's ideal for calling in. But if we can ask our friends and people that have become our friends to come in studio, the sound quality is just 100 times better. And it makes for a better experience for the listener. I believe that the listener will listen longer to a subject that he doesn't or she doesn't care about if the person is in studio. And I know this because I've done it. Mm-hmm. There have been times where I'm listening to Howard Stern interview someone that I don't care about, and I walk away going, wow.
Wow, Katy Perry is really interesting.
Right, 100%. 100%. And Joe was like, we should keep doing that. So that's where I would guess, I would say like our innovation in it came, but it came from this balled up anger and resentment that we had, and I felt like we channeled it in a really good way. And I think that it's worked out for all of us. Joe's been promoted. I'm happy. And now, like, my show has become the show. It's like a transient show. Like, you come do my show for a little while, and then you go on to the next thing that you're going to do. And that's a big deal for me. Like, I joke that when you graduate from my show, I'm really happy. When you get asked to do afternoons, or you go on and do your own talk show in Milwaukee, or you go to South Dakota, like, I am here for it, because I look at it as that being a big part of my job, is to help a young producer or a young update anchor or a young reporter get to the next thing. That's important to me.
That was like one of the first things you said to us on day one of class, is that you're a firm believer in the mantra of lift as you climb. Mm-hmm. And that was something that stuck with me from day one. And I mean, I'd listened to you previously on the radio, and I had this idea of who you were in my head. But when you, that was like one of the first things you hit us with during your introduction. And that just kind of solidified, like, all right, I'm very glad I signed up for this, because I know I'm going to be working with someone who actually cares.
It's a big deal. There are people in our industry that don't care about that, and that's their right. Like, they're there to do them, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I've found it's a better environment when I know that everyone has goals, and maybe your goal isn't to produce the nighttime show at the Score. Okay, well, let's do the best job that you can at producing it. And then when you're done, I want to help you do the next thing that you want to do. Even if the next thing is you want to replace me, because quite honestly, if I ever leave the Score, Joe would be the perfect candidate to replace me. He has a way of doing things that I think would be a great listen. But whatever he wanted to do, I'm in 100% support of it. And I want to help that person get to it. I joke about my tree, like my broadcasting tree. I'm very proud of it. Like, some of the people that have come through and been interns or producers on my show, I mean, it's a good list. Like, Nick Friedel was my intern. And the fact that that guy is out there killing it right now, and that when I see him or if I need something, I can call him or I can text him or hit him up on DM and he's got me. Like, those type of things, like, I get excited about. You know, I look at it and say, yeah, I helped that person in a small way. Or like, you might even remember years from now the concept of lift as you climb, and that you'll give that to someone else and they'll be able to take that with them. And that, like, that's important. Like, my former students, that's a big deal to me when former students succeed, and it may be in small part because of something that they picked up in class. Like, there's no better feeling than that. None.
Well, you're such a mentor to us. Who had been your mentor that got you to this point?
Oh man, that's also a wonderful question. Well, I brought up Steve Dahl earlier. He would probably bristle at the impact that he's had on me. He would probably be uncomfortable, because it's different genres. I do sports. It's Steve loves sports, but he doesn't really do sports. And he used to have me on his podcast a long time ago. And it was weird because it was a different cross-section of audience for me. And I would see, like, followers on Twitter or at the time Facebook, or the people that wanted to friend me, like, I heard you on the Dahl podcast and I really, really liked you. So Steve is really high on that list of people that helped me. Doug Buffone, who I mentioned earlier as well. Gaining that, you guys know that I'm an emotional dude. but gaining that guy's respect when it came to my football coverage was huge. That guy played 14 years in the NFL, played next to Dick Butkus. And when I got to the point where he was asking me what I thought about the Bears game or what I thought about what was said at Halas Hall, like, that was a big deal. He wrote in his book, I still have it, he wrote that he had never seen anyone work as hard as I did, and that he thought that my zenith of my career would be doing, like, a national show. Like, and that meant the world to me. As far as At the Score, other guys at the Score, the Boers and Bernstein show, their ability to not have ego when it came to, I used to do a Bear Report with them every day, 5 o'clock. That to me is, I joke about that all the time with guys. That is the type of territory that you want. Like, that is that's nice real estate. If you can get 5 o'clock, people are getting in their car, they're leaving work, and you're talking about the most important team in Chicago. They allowed me to do the segment however I want it. Like, you're there, we're not. So you tell us what happened. And they allowed for me to just do what I do. And it gave me a lot of favor. I mean, I talk about my boss, Mitch, but on the TV side, there were some really good people, like people who were better to me than they should have been. Peggy Kaczynski from Channel 5, high on my list of people that I respect and like. Paula Ferris, who's now, you know, doing an incredible religious podcast, which I'm not surprised about at all. She was amazing to me, like trying to help me transition from doing radio to television, which is not an easy thing to do. There are some great examples of it. Robin Baumgarten knocks it out the park. And she was a long time, like, radio personality, and she did a great job with it. Krista Ruck, who's a name that you won't know, she's executive producer of sports at Channel 2. She was the executive producer at Channel 9 when I was an intern there. And I've known Krista now for 20 years. She still actually refers to me as Little Lawrence. Like, like, still. Like, she will see me on TV and be like, oh, Little Lawrence is on TV. but she was instrumental in helping me figure out, like, what type of journalist that I wanted to be. Like, how you go about handling a press conference or dealing with a team that's not happy. So I know that there's a list of people that I'm, and there's tons of people that I'm, like, forgetting here, but those are the ones that immediately come to mind as being significant in where I'm at right now and, like, the next thing that I end up doing.
Well, you mentioned just now that the people that were mentoring you let you do you, and that's exactly what you did with us in class. You didn't have where you're like, okay, you need to talk about this, and this is what you need to do, and this is how you have to do it. You literally told us, you have this time frame, do your thing. And that's the type of...
I wanted to make sure that you guys understood that I don't want clones.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm happy that you're on my tree, but I don't want you to be exactly like... I want you to be better. Like, so the way that that's going to happen is... If you allow your individuality to flourish, like, I'm super happy that, you know, the two of you are sitting here, because I felt like they're different, but it could work. And when you guys would do shows together, I'm like, God, like, that really did work. Like, they're they're really good together. And I don't want carbon copies. I want you to build a resume reel that is going to accentuate who you are. There's lots of people out there that you can copy, mm-hmm. you know, like you can tons of them. But if you're original, people tend to flock to that. And I want you to explore who you are because it's going to change. Like, we're going to have this conversation. I'm going to be finishing my podcast 10 years from now, you know, and I'm going to be retired in Arizona teaching at the Cronkite School. And Bella's going to be like a big star on TV. No. And she's going to be different. But there'll be an element of who she is right now there. You'll be the person running the Meekum auctions or something. and we'll sit down and talk, and you will have learned so much, but you will have also stayed true to like some core principles of who you are. So that sort of thing is important. Like I see some people making the mistake of, I want you to do it like I do it. And I'm like, be better.
If you're a copy, then why would people want to go to you when there's already someone else that's the original one they can go to?
Facts.
That's why news outlets, we learn, why do people go to certain news outlets for original information that they can't find anywhere else? So if the Tribune and the Times and the Herald and everyone's basically talking about the same exact thing in the same exact way, why are you going to choose those over another one where they're giving you news about a certain player that you don't know?
Right. And there's a degree of evolution, like you mentioned. I mean, who we are right now may not be, you know, who's reflected 10 years from now. Yeah. So, I mean, like, how have you changed, you know, from your time?
Oh, my God.
I know this is a deep question, but
I know I've joked about this in class occasionally. I talk about this on the air all the time. 27-year-old me hates 43-year-old me.
Oh, no.
Oh, he hates him because 27-year-old me was like, you got your opportunity. You're on the air. You should be screaming about everything that makes you angry. That's what good sports talk is. And the 43-year-old me is like, okay, that can be effective occasionally, but we don't have to do that all the time. We don't have the energy to do that all the time. And honestly, the audience tunes you out at a certain point. Mm-hmm. If all you're doing is presenting anger, if all you're doing is presenting everything sucks and everything's terrible, you're not showing. I'm not like that all the time. Like when I'm at home, I mean, Mel probably, she has some thoughts on this too, but I'm pretty quiet. I enjoy and I emote. Like I watch sports and I emote. So why not accentuate some of that stuff when I'm doing the show? I would say that 27-year-old me was reckless on the air. Like that guy was reckless. I was doing the journalistic stuff. Like I was fact checking, but you have to be responsible for your opinion. Mm-hmm. And when I got the opportunity to go out more and more to cover games, I realized that there was a responsibility in it. And that might mean that there are going to be people that hate you. There might be people that hate you. And I've come across, not hate, hate's a strong word, but people who don't like what you do or don't like the way that you do it. I have had plenty of confrontations with coaches, front office people, and athletes. In a lot of those cases, I have made my point about whatever it is my opinion was, and it's been respected. And like, okay, I get where you're coming from. You've done your homework. That's fine that we disagree on this. Kenny Williams and I probably have a blow up once every couple years. Like he heard something or I said something that he didn't like. And we have, like, one year we literally were yelling at each other on the backfields at Camelback Ranch at spring training. So much so that an official from the White Sox texted me and was like, are you all right? Like, is everything like okay? And we had a long conversation about what happened. And what I found out is that Kenny Williams and I are a lot alike. So that's part of the reason that we continue to butt heads, but it's always good. And then whenever I see him, like I'm happy to see him. Like, and he seems like he's happy to see me, but that dude was reckless. The 43-year-old version of me is not as reckless. And there's more joy in what I do. And I have opened myself up to allowing a little bit more of that to come through. Like, I love sports. Like, still, I will watch. I don't care. if I'm driving and there are a couple people playing basketball and it seems like real, like I will stop and watch to see what the next basket is going to be. Like, I still dig that. And so if I can bring that to the audience, whether it's on radio or television, I feel like that's the lesson that I've learned over the last, I would say over the last 10 years, but definitely over the last 15 years, that you don't have to do sports talk the way that it was done in the 90s, where, and there are some people that have actually made a cottage industry out of the yelling and the screaming.
Right.
I just can't. Like, I'm not there. Now, it doesn't mean it's not in my bag. Like, if I'm using the metaphor of a golfer, it's in, the driver's in my bag. And there are times when it is called for, but I found that it's effective, more effective, if I don't do it all the time.
Right.
If I'm upset about something and I like take it there, like really take it there, my hope is that the listener is like, yo, this is
this is real.
This is real right now. And it happened last year, where one night I came in and I just had enough of John Fox. Enough. It was ridiculous. Like, he wasn't coaching the team well. He wasn't presenting the Bears well, in my estimation. He just seemed sour and awful. And I launched. Like, I told Herbie, my EP, I was like, look, it's about to go down. He was like, oh, baby, let's go. You know, so and I went into what I would consider, for me at this point, a tirade about John Fox. I lit John Fox up for 30 minutes. Oof. Without a break.
Oof.
I lit him up. And it's one of those things where sometimes, like, when I lose it like that on the air, like, I do have some perspective, and I'm like, did I go too far with that? And Herbie was like, no, you did not. And I got a message from a friend of mine who works in the NFL and was like, yo, that was harsh. But
authentic.
Completely authentic. And there are a lot of people who feel the same way at Halas Hall and around the league that you do. The rant, another friend of mine sent the rant to Mike Tirico, who was calling the Bears game on Sunday Night Football. So every time that he referenced how Chicago felt about John Fox, he was referencing what I was talking about.
That's awesome.
That's pretty crazy.
That is. Well, we talked about your biggest failure.
Are you guys like light on time? Like,
no,
you guys
I'm in no rush.
I don't want to keep you. Apparently, this is going to be a two-parter.
Are you joking? You know you're you're high on our priority list.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any time with Lawrence is precious time.
All right. I just wanted to make sure.
We're just honored to be here.
Yeah.
Honestly, more
this
than
is
anything.
A huge honor. Are you joking?
All right. I wanted to be respectful of your time.
Oh, no. This is awesome. Honestly, thanks again for having us.
Oh, no problem.
But we talked about your biggest failure. I want to ask you, what has so far been your biggest success?
Mm-hmm. So 2014, there are two. 2014, I was trying to decide, like, my deals are every couple years, so at the Score, and I was trying to decide if I was going to go back, and I re-signed, and I was doing the nighttime show, and I got an email from my boss that said I had been nominated for Broadcaster of the Year from the Illinois Broadcasters Association, and it wasn't sports talk host. It wasn't it radio host. It was Broadcaster of the Year. I didn't win, but I was a finalist for it. Like, that's a big deal for me. Like, being one of three finalists for that award was a big deal. The other thing is, you know, how I feel about people who have worked on the show. Like, that's a big deal, too. Like, I don't want that to get lost. But the show I do now, the football show that I do now on NBC Sports Chicago, I've never had as much fun doing television as that. Like, I look forward to it every week. I feel like we do a fun show that's informative, and I've never been given this much leeway. Like, my boss, Kevin Cross, over at NBC Sports Chicago, basically said to me, I want you to do a radio show on television. I was like, bet, I can do that. And I want you to do it with these guys. And last year, you know, with Jim Miller and Alex Brown and Lance Briggs, and Jim took an opportunity to go over to Fox, which was great for him. And we added in Matt Forte, which was great for us. And I feel like we're doing something cool. Like we're having, like in my mind, our show is like the TNT basketball show, and I get to be Ernie Johnson. Like I get to have these incredibly outsized personalities that I deal with and allow them to just do whatever they do. So I look forward to it every single Sunday. Like the crew that works on our show is unreal. They work so hard to try and get everything together. Our social media people do a great job with it too. And like seeing how quickly they'll turn around something crazy that one of those guys will say and turn it into something is a blast. But we did a thing last year. It's at the top of my Twitter feed. I put it there and just left it there, where they were playing Apache from Sugar Hill Gang in the studio, where we were talking with JJ Stankovic and jump on it. And I'm doing like the dance, like in my chair.
I saw that. It's on your Twitter.
Yeah, it is. It is that moment is probably my favorite moment on television. Because
and you're in a suit, so you're all suited up, right, like formal.
Right. You don't even have to know. You don't have to hear the music to know exactly what I'm doing.
Yep.
And everyone got involved. And the fact that JJ, at the end of it, JJ, who's this buttoned up, serious reporter, was like, oh, yeah, jump on it. And then, like, did the thing. We were floored. We were absolutely floored. I don't know if I've ever laughed so hard on television. It ended up being a great time. So those things, along with my students and my interns and producers that go on and do great stuff, like those are the things I'm probably most proud of.
Well, what's the crazy? Now I'm curious. What's the craziest thing you've done or experienced?
This could be maybe having someone plan to come on your nighttime show who you had high expectations for and maybe turn out to be a total disaster. Just throwing that out there, too.
Did an interview. Jonathan Hood and I. Jonathan Hood is a talk show host over at ESPN. He is one of the most creative guys with sound in the world. Like he does incredible impersonation. He does a great one of me, which is outstanding. We did an interview with Jake the Snake Roberts. This was very early in my career. It's so funny that you bring it up, because I was talking with my wife about this. Wrestlers, an interview with a wrestler can go one of two ways. It can be the greatest interview you've ever done, or the saddest interview that you've ever done.
Oh, no.
And Jake the Snake Roberts was dealing with an addiction to crack at the time that I want to say he had lost his daughter, custody of his daughter. And we went down the dark well with him. And I walked away from that interview like, what?
What just happened?
What just happened? And it stays with me. Like him talking about addiction and crack and all of it, like it stays with me even to this day. Like just Saturday, we were having, because we had Dan Le Batard, whose show I adore. I think it's the best sports show in the country. I watch and listen to it every day. And he had Kamala, the Ugandan giant, on. And Kamala is really, the guy's name is James. He's from Mississippi. He's not from Uganda. he was talking to them. He was having a great conversation with them. And then in the interview, he revealed how he's lost both legs to diabetes, like he's broke, like the whole night. And I was just like, ah. And that's what sparked the conversation with me and Mel. She goes, have you ever had something like that happen? And I was like, yeah, let me tell you about this interview that I did with Jake the Snake Roberts back in the day.
Well, if you're interested about Jake the Snake and what he's up to today, he was actually just on Rogan a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
And actually it was a pretty interesting interview. It wasn't as depressing as pure crack addiction and everything.
Yeah, I want to say Diamond Dallas Page helped him too. Like,
okay.
Because DDP has been doing yoga, and I had DDP on the show a couple years ago where he's helped a lot of those guys who are addicted to stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That was an all-timer. Like, that was a straight-up all-timer for me.
So were you finding yourself like backtracking at all, like during his?
Yeah, I was.
Were you trying to change the subject the whole time?
No. We made the decision. The two of us had made the decision. This is where this is going, and it was nonverbal. Just we're gonna keep seeing if there's more layers to this, and there ended up being a lot more layers to it.
Wow,
a ton.
I would have loved to be in the room for that one.
It was. I'll see if I can find a tape. There's probably Hood probably has an actual tape of that interview because it was like we both looked at you like, oh, we got like chills like afterwards because it was so because our show was like a wrestling show, so it was like this happy-go-lucky. Like Rob was just over, so we were talking about wrestling. And here's Jake the Snake Roberts. And it's like,
Would you ever consider interviewing a rapper or a music artist?
I have.
Who?
Common.
Whoa, that is awesome.
And in the interview with Common, I've referred to it a couple times in the pod. We had an interview with him, and he actually told me that he wanted to be Green Lantern. This was years before.
Oh, wow.
A year before the Green Lantern movie came out. So I guess he had tested to play John Stewart, who is one of the Green Lanterns, and they went with Ryan Reynolds. And it was like right after the movie just bombed that we had him on. And he was like, yeah, maybe they should have gone a different way with it. But yeah, I've interviewed a bunch of musicians here and there, actors. I really do like Jake Johnson quite a bit, and it's weird that we've become kind of friendly because he grew up listening to The Score. That's another thing that's weird for me is, oh man, I've been listening to you since I was young. I'm like, how old am I like at this point in my life? But there are other hosts now around the country that are like, I used to listen to you and Dan Zampillo, who was my old partner. I used to listen to you guys when I was young, and now they're hosting shows in Minneapolis and Miami and San Diego and Milwaukee and stuff. And that's bizarre.
Who are your favorite music artists?
I love The Roots. I am a big fan of DJ Jazzy Jeff. His Beyond Wonderland mix, if you look it up on SoundCloud, if you want to get a sense of who I am musically, that hits all the right notes. Like everything that's on there is pretty much who I am musically. I love Stevie Wonder. Like that's a guy. Like that's one of
definitely.
My, like in my mind, like a dream concert is, and you could go either way, but a dream concert for me is Stevie Wonder opening up for Prince.
Oof. Wow, that's powerful.
And I believe President Obama had that. I think that happened. I think that there was a night where they both performed for the president, and I was just sitting there going, huh, that's exactly what I would do if I were president. Stevie Wonder and Prince would be at my house. So the Prince is a big force. Like, I love Prince's music. The fact that he made an album with no bass and black people bought it, that to me is amazing. Like one of the highest selling records of all time. I love Led Zeppelin. And that's because when I was in high school, we had the radio station at my high school was a rock format. So it gave me the opportunity to branch out musically where I was an R&B and definitely I was born the same year as rap music. So like rap is a big deal to me. It opened my horizons to Led Zeppelin, and obviously they were stealing from blues people, so that allowed me to kind of go backwards and listen to blues. But that David Bowie and Queen, like that song Under Pressure, has a lot of meaning to those of us who came through the Home of Flossmoor radio program. Because we remember I told you guys that we would do these documentaries, so we do these 55-minute documentaries, and the song that would play before every documentary was Under Pressure. And the timing aspect of it was a big deal. So you had to, all the snaps at the end, you have to time them out.
Did you use a metronome or something for it?
No, I mean, you have to literally count out. I want to say it's 14 snaps. It's been 30 years since I've had to do this, but I think it's 14 snaps because at the end of the song, that's when the timer starts in your dock. So you have to be on it. So anytime I hear that song, I immediately revert back to junior year of high school and getting ready for the documentary like that. So, I mean, it's a lot of stuff. Like, there's a lot of artists that I love and will cape for and all sorts of stuff. But that's a fairly representative list that I gave you.
What about, like, 90s era hip hop music? Because I feel like that is
a
like
Tribe Called Quest.
Tribe Called Quest. Like, do you like ever listen to like Gangstar?
Yeah.
Like Far Side.
You're hitting all the right notes. I've actually Fife from A Tribe Called Quest used to come whenever he was in Chicago. He would come do my show.
Whoa.
So I did one of the last interviews with Fife before he died.
Wow.
And he was a big sports junkie. So we would talk, like, we almost never talked music.
Really?
Yeah. Like, there were questions. Like, I had questions.
Sure.
But he'd want to talk about what was up with the Blackhawks. Or, like, he's like, oh, I'm going to the Cubs game. You know, where should I go? Like, where should I go hang out? Like, that was always cool. Like, my EP Herbie surprised me with that one night. Where he's like, go to break. And I'm like, why? Like, that's not what the clock, like, we have times we're supposed to break. He's like, just go to break. I'm like, okay. I'm like, is there something wrong? He's like, no, Fife's here. And I'm like, what?
Get him in here.
He's like, Fife's downstairs. So I'm going to go get him.
Wow, that's awesome.
And I was like, what? Like, come on. And then he came in there and did like an hour. And we just like hung out and talked about stuff.
That is so cool.
Yeah, those are fun moments. Like, those are, and sometimes like I like taking the audience for that ride. There are a lot of people that may not be like, why is he doing this? And then they'll be like, I dug that. Like, even if they don't necessarily know who A Tribe Called Quest is or whatever, they get down with it. And they give me a lot of, my program director gives me a lot of latitude because he trusts that I'm going to make the right decision on some of this. Like, I'm not going to go, it's not going to go too long. It's not going to, but he trusts that I'm going to try and do the right thing with some of those guests. And he supports it. Like, sometimes I'll get an email from him and he'll be like, hey, there's a movie out and this guy should be on your show. And I'll be like, really? And you go do it. There's a great film. I just got a text from this guy last night. Phil Donlin. There's a great baseball film called High and Outside. It's like an indie film and he's a star of it. This guy's a huge White Sox fan. He's been in a ton of movies in Hollywood. I did the Q&A for the premiere of it at the Gene Siskel Theater. You talk about things that are cool. Like, that's like, that was cool. And now Phil is coming to town next week. He's like, let's go grab a beer and talk baseball. Like, those types of things are dope. I had this predates you guys. Tabitha Soren used to be a VJ on MTV. And she is a 90s icon, like an 80s, 90s icon. She's married to Michael Lewis, who wrote Moneyball. And now she's a photographer. She did a whole series on baseball. I had her on my show, and it'll eventually be an episode on the podcast. I had her on my show. We talked for an hour about baseball and photographing baseball and her interview with Tupac and all sorts of stuff. And it was amazing, like amazing. So sometimes you do have to come out of your comfort zone and you'll be surprised at what ends up happening when you allow for differences to play. And like I'm saying, like you two in particular, I just in my mind imagine that 5 years from now, Matt's going to have something that Bella's going to excel at or vice versa. And you'll be able to call on each other and it'll end up being like out of sight. So like those types of things, you never know like who you end up like working with and vibing with. And when you catch a vibe like that, it's pretty dope.
The business is all about that. Networking.
Facts. This is true. It's very important. It's important that you realize that, you know, that old adage of you see the same people on the same way up you see on the way down is true. And the better that you can be to people, I think the easier it is to navigate. And you don't have to love everybody. Like, there's some people that are going to rub you the wrong way. You don't have to like everything. But I do think that there should be a healthy respect for other people's art, even if you disagree with it. And you can kind of go, hey, I don't like that aspect of what they do. I'm not going to do that. I mean, that that's there have been a lot of people that I've come across where I've said, I'm never going to act like that. I'm not going to do this job this way. There have been other people who I've probably prejudged, and then I got to know them. And I'm like, okay, I understand why this person does this. And that takes a little bit of time to understand and to allow yourself to grow into some of this stuff.
How far into your career did you start getting the hang of things and feeling comfortable with running your own show?
I would say I used to do a partner show, and it's a few episodes back. My old partner actually is a guy named Dan Zampillo. He runs ESPN 710 in Los Angeles now. When he decided that he wasn't going to go the on-air route, that he was going to go the management route, I was devastated. Like, absolutely, because I thought, this is it. Like, I'm 22, and I have found my partner. Like, that's amazing. That never happens. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to go run stuff. And I was like, oh. So I was kind of on my own. It's most people think that I don't want a partner, and maybe they're probably, like, maybe they're right in that I'm so entrenched in my ways as a solo host that it might be difficult for me to at this point build a partnership. Like, those things are difficult and they take time. But I was crushed when he decided that he wanted to go that route. And I started to develop the idea of, there's a great line. It's Busta Rhymes. He's like, if I'm not going to be the greatest, if I'm not going to be part of the greatest, I'm going to be the greatest myself. And that kind of drove me. Like, I was going to do me. I was going to do what ended up being at the time titled The Me Show. Like, it was used to be Me and Z. Like, the name of the show was Me and Z, The Me and Z Show. Because people were like, who are you on the show with? It was Me and Z. And when he left, I was like, oh, so now it's just The Me Show. And I just started kind of doing that. So, man, it would be really difficult to take on a partner, but I would be up for the challenge. But that was super hard. Like, that was super hard. So a few years later, once Joe and I got together, because most of my time in between that was covering the Bears. So I had an idea of who I was on the air, but you don't truly know until you do a bunch of shows. So I would say probably 2010. And I've become more comfortable in my own skin on air, I would say 2014. Like, I'm super comfortable with the way that we do a show, how I prep for it, like, that sort of thing. So in the last 5 years, like, that's a weird thing to say, like, that you're 38 and you still, at the time, you're 38 and you're just now starting to feel a level of comfort.
Well, do you think essentially if he had not left, you wouldn't have been who you are today? Like, you would have been more of a partner person? Like, do you think it would have changed things?
I don't know. It's a great question. Like, if Z would have stuck around, like, what would it have been?
Mm-hmm.
I think it would have been great. And even when we, like, you can go back and listen to the episode. Even now, we actually still have that thing that connects us. Like, we still have, he is one of my, in this business, it's rare that you run across people that get you. From the moment that we met each other 20 years ago, like, we've been on the same wavelength, and he gets me. So, like, even now, I'll call him and be like, hey, I'm thinking about this. He actually, Zeke should get a lot of credit, because he actually focused the podcast. I was like, I want to do this podcast where I just talk about whatever I want to talk about. And he's like, that's stupid. I'm like, why is it stupid? And he goes, well, you need to focus it. You need a hook. What's the hook? Why am I listening to you? He's like, obviously people are going to listen because they like you on The Score, but they can get that on The Score. So what are you going to do that's going to be different in a podcast? So we went out and had dinner. Jason Goff, who's one of my really good friends in the business as well. Like, both those guys, like, said to me, well, how do you want to do it? Like, make it more specific. And that's when I said, I want to interview. I care about media. I really enjoy learning more about media. So why don't I interview more media people? And now it's become a cool thing. Like, people look forward to the interviews, and I look forward to doing them. A lot of people are my friends in the business, but there are some people that I had no relationship with that I've interviewed so far, and I've walked away like, whoa. Like, that happened. Like, I didn't really know Jim Rose. Like, I knew of him, but I didn't really know him. And we sat down for 20 minutes, and it was great. John Weideman, who's the voice of the Blackhawks. I didn't know John. I knew of him, and we talked for an hour. And it was he actually told a friend of mine how much he enjoyed the conversation, like, unprompted. And I was like, wow, doing something right. Must be doing something. But, yeah, I do wonder what would have happened. I also wonder what would have happened if I would have left Chicago. I've been lucky. I haven't had to leave.
I'm so glad you didn't, because then we wouldn't be here right now.
Well, I might still be here. I may have made it back. But that's a weird thing. Like, once you take that leap, like, I have a friend. I have a bunch of friends who have left Chicago, and, like, their whole goal is to get back here. And you could spend your whole career trying to make it back to Chicago. And sometimes I wonder if it's better to accept where you are and just make it great.
Embrace it, yeah.
Yeah, like, I'm in Phoenix or I'm in San Diego. I'm going to run Phoenix. I'm going to run San Diego instead of looking for the validation. We're all kind of looking for that validation, looking up for the validation of being re-welcomed back home. So that's kind of, to answer your question, that's kind of it. You guys got anything else? I feel like I've rambled on. This is now like a two-part episode, by the way.
It's so interesting, though.
It's like a two-part episode.
No one can get enough of you and your stories. This is so much wisdom. I'm being serious, because for us, like, this, you are a role model, and we're going to be following that career path. So it's stuff that we genuinely want to know, because it's stuff that we probably will end up facing.
That's why I wanted to do the Ask Me Anything. Like, when I'd have you guys, is like, I had a lesson plan for that day, but stuff would come up and I'd be like, maybe this would be a good point where I can stop and give you guys practical advice on what you're going to be facing. Because the theory and stuff is great and all the work stuff is important, but part of the value of having adjunct professors, having people with real experience out in the real world, I think is you can draw off of it and you can find out, like, what should be in a contract? Should I hire an agent? What's it like to deal with program directors? What's the perfect link for a podcast? Like, those sorts of things I think are valuable to students. I hope that more professors do that instead of just, well, here's your assignment for this week.
Yeah, and essentially at the communications college, I so see that, and that's why I feel so blessed to be at a school like DePaul, because those resources are provided for us. So you have to take full advantage of it and really, you know, embrace it, like you said earlier with the whole being in
Chicago. I mean, you can only gain so much from a lesson plan, but there are some of those jewels that you throw out or that come up in some of these more candid conversations that make the course invaluable.
Well, I thank you guys for doing this. I truly do. Like, I wanted, it was on my list of things to do that I wanted. I was going to do this in, it's so weird because, like, some of the stuff in your mind goes differently. In my mind, this was one episode where it would be my students, my wife, and my producer, one of my young producers, Tony. And then I was like, everyone gets their own episode. And now you guys are getting two episodes.
Honored.
because I'm already looking at the time, and I think that's probably too long to ask anyone to listen to one. But we'll give them a part one, and then we'll give them this one part two. But I'm so happy that you guys decided. You guys did a great job with the interview.
Thank you so much for
having us.
I mean, you got some stuff out of me that I haven't really talked about publicly.
That was the goal. I didn't want to make it boring.
It's all what you guys teach us here at DePaul. I mean,
yeah. What other dirt can we give?
I mean, there's tons. here's what I'd like for you guys to commit to. How about next year we do the same thing?
Let's do it.
Yes.
So next year, like, there'll be other experiences, and this time I'll be the one asking the questions. There'll be other experiences that you guys will have, and we can kind of talk about, like, what happened, like, what changed in the last 12 months or so.
That's
deal?
So
I'm committed.
Deal.
All right, I'll bring donuts.
Nice.
I'll bring donuts next
time. I'll bring Zeppole.
Please. Oh, and since we're here, How can people follow you on social media? Let's do that.
So thrilled you asked. So shameless plug for myself. I'd love if you have any interest at all in motorsports, automotive industry, science in general. My best friend and I, Steven, we run a podcast that we film in my apartment called Cars, Life, and Everything in Between. You can find it anywhere. It's on iTunes, Spotify, Facebook, YouTube, Libsyn. It's out there. We love to talk about the industry. We will bring on different guests. We've recently had on nuclear physicists. We've had ER trauma surgeons come on. We've had people in the nursing industry. So, I mean, we try to, you know, garner a slightly more general interest with some of our guests. But the core stuff and the core to the program is really auto industry. He's an engineer. I'm a journalist. That's what we're most passionate about. So hit us up on Cars Life and Everything in Between. My Instagram, of course. That's pretty much it for me. Bella, what do you got?
What's your Instagram?
Yeah, you didn't give it.
Oh, I mean, yeah, it's my last name. It's kind of complicated. It's weird to spell. My last name is Zaife. So the Instagram is Zaifsta. So it's my last name plus the letters STA. So Zaiffsta. Also, MatthewZaife.com. That's where I write a lot of my personal articles. I'll go out and I'll review some various cars. I like to write about things going on in the industry. Most recently, I talked about some of the regulation changes in the World Endurance Championships. So I like to really hardcore nerd out. I mean, Lawrence is the sports guy. You know, Bella is focused on soccer and just sports in general. For me, it's cars and cars and cars, and that is my focus. So if you like cars, come on, check me out. Let me know what you think.
Bella?
My Instagram is at Isabel Michaels, Isabelle Michaels, Michaels. You can follow me there. Check out some soccer news on there as well, and on the Chicago Tribune's 90-minute soccer section, where I am a contributor, both digitally and through columns.
Thank you both for this. This was a this was way more than I was expecting.
In a good way, right?
No, 100%. I was expecting us to talk for like 45 minutes, but you guys did great.
Thank you.
You did great with this. So it's awesome that this was that you were up to the challenge of taking this on. And I appreciate you giving you're still in class, like giving up some of your break to come be in here. So thanks for doing this. It means a lot to me that you guys are going to be stars. I'm very glad that the people who listen to my podcast are getting a chance to hear you. And I hope that it turns out well, where you gain some people that'll be interested in the stuff that you're doing. Cause I think you both are doing some really, really cool stuff.
Don't make me tear up.
All right. No, that was me after the final. So
we don't want to do this again.
Yeah. You guys are definitely going to be invited to do it. So thanks again for doing it.
Thank you. And sincerest gratitude from both of us. I mean, what definitely. A sense of validation to get asked to come onto your podcast. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to that. I'm happy that I got to talk about some of that stuff and to let you know kind of where I'm coming from on some of these things, like what my philosophies are as far as doing this in an industry that can sometimes be a little weird, and how what the product that you hear on the radio and see on television and now hear on the podcast, like how that developed. It developed with a lot of trial and error, and mostly error, to a point where I finally feel more comfortable with what it is I'm putting out, whether it's television, radio, or here on the podcast. Sincere thanks to my students. I could have picked anybody, and I feel like it would have been really good. I'm so happy that Bella and Matthew were up for doing this, and I thought that they kicked ass on it. Part two specifically, like the way they asked questions and how they followed a train of thought to ask those questions, I thought was really good. I have high hopes for both of them being big, big stars in this business, one way or another. Let me get to some of your emails. And you can email the podcast at houseoflpodcast@gmail.com. Let's see. A lot of people are asking to go to the Wolves game. I'm going to be in touch with you. If you're picked, you're going to be in touch with you. And hopefully you can make it out to the game. So keep Saturday open, at least until you hear from me. This from Chris. Chris says, "Hey, Lawrence, been with you since day one and love all the podcasts. You've got to be the best interviewer in the city." Oh, thank you. That's nice. "Would love for you to sit down with Peggy Kaczynski. Haven't seen much from her since she transitioned to the investigative reporter at NBC.
Peggy is a true OG of Chicago sports media. She has done so much other work in TV, radio, feels she would have a lot to offer. I know she's still around because I can still hear her typing at Bears Pressers. That's not her. That's not her. But if you listen to this episode, then you know that she is someone that I consider a mentor. I saw Peggy at the Chicagoland Sports Hall of Fame back in September, and it was great to catch up with her. She's one of my favorites, and yes, she is. For season two, I can almost promise that she will be on the podcast. But thanks for your interest, and thanks for the email. This is from Mike. Mike. This is from Mike. Hey, Lawrence, love the podcast and the show. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but can you think of any bloggers without traditional training? I think with the influx of these team sports city sites, there could be a fun episode about how to start off and how they become successful and what tips they would have. Don't mean to program your show, just a thought. That's from Mike. Well, maybe that's a conversation I have with Julie DeCaro, because she's not classically trained. She was a lawyer. And then she started, was like, I like sports, so I'm going to start writing sports. There's a bunch of people. And so, yeah, maybe a roundtable of bloggers, like sports bloggers in the city might be kind of cool. Thanks for the idea. That could be a lot of fun. But, yeah, Julie is, her origin story is really interesting. Maybe that becomes an episode. Same thing with Maggie. I need to get Maggie in here. I make fun of Maggie's voice all the time because it's the most Chicago thing ever. Like it's more Chicago than the Wiener Circle. Like it's more Chicago than Demon Dogs. Maggie's voice is more Chicago than the Chicago flag itself. All right, that's enough. She's going to get mad again. This from Victor. Lawrence, big fan of your podcast. What's the deal with Kevin White? Haven't heard him mentioned since the Pats game. That's because he's been inactive. This is the end of what you're going to see of Kevin White. But I give Kevin White a lot of credit. He is taken to the, when he was playing, he's like, look, I'm not going to catch a lot of passes, but I'm going to go down here and block and play hard. That's all it is. He was someone who couldn't be redeemed. Even with this regime, he couldn't be redeemed. Good luck to him, though. Seems like a nice guy. This from Doug. Doug says, Lawrence, I love the podcast. Had an idea for a potential guest. Dave Miska. Oh, baby. Dave would be interesting because I'm sure that it would end up being us talking about music because he's a big music guy. But you are right. Him engineering Cubs games. So I got to get to him before spring training starts. But you're right. Dave Miska would be a lot of fun. Thanks for the suggestions. I appreciate it. Thanks for listening to the pod, too, by the way. Thanks for the support of it. I'm so excited about, like, I started mapping out, like, guests that I want into the new year. Oh, and the White Panther episode is happening. Like, that's happening. I can't decide if it's the last episode of the year. And after what happened today, I think it's going to end up being the first episode of season two, which will start the first week of January. I think that's what's going to happen because I can tell you this as you're listening to the pod. I just finished an interview with Jake Johnson, who Drinking Buddies, New Girl, now in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and it was great. We talked for like 45 minutes. I don't have a place to put that on my radio show, so guess what? Half of that conversation is coming to the House of L, and it's really good, and it's about the making of Into the Spider-Verse. And you're going to dig it. So that will be next week's episode. So that'll be what, the Christmas episode? Are we already there? Yeah. That'll end up being the Christmas episode. We'll drop it on the 26th. And then White Panther will be the first episode of the next season. But we're definitely sitting down. But again, a hearty thank you to you for your support throughout this endeavor. And keep the emails coming. HouseofLPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for the support on the score. I hope you enjoyed this episode because this was one of the more difficult ones for me to do. Not that I don't like talking about myself because I clearly do. But there were some wounds there that got opened up. So I'm glad that you listened to it and Hopefully you got something out of it. Thanks again to Matthew Zafe and Bella Michaels for their hard work on this. They were terrific. And thanks for listening and supporting this podcast. We'll be back with a Bears one after the Niners game. Peace!
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.